Chavis Halvavos, Shar HaBechina, Sunday afternoon, Gut Chodesh, Aleph Tammuz. So I don't mind saying on tape for the record that it's a pity, a real pity and a real loss that the attendance has dwindled in Shar HaBechina, because according to the Chavis Halvavos, this is an avodas Hashem that we can do 24/7, maybe not 24, because maybe when we're sleeping we're not feeling thankful, but this is a constant. A, it's constant. B, it's avodas Hashem. C, it's the basis of all avodas Hashem according to the Chavis Halvavos. It's so important that he puts it after Shar HaYichud. There's no way to overstate the meaningfulness of the fact that after Shar HaYichud, he puts Shar HaBechina. It's a pity because we take things for granted, and that's his point in his Hakdama. And he's trying to teach us not to take anything for granted. Another reason is that it's a pity is that even for the people who come to the class and listen, I don't want to put you on the spot, just like I don't want to put myself on the spot, to say, you know, we're learning, and we're digesting, and we're listening, and we're hearing, and we're remembering. The question is, do we walk around feeling grateful? Grateful is a feeling. You can't fake it. It's not something you can learn in class. Because they are supposed to feel grateful, but Chavis wants us. Now, it's too much to ask of us, probably, to walk around feeling grateful every moment. But 5 minutes a day, do we feel grateful for oxygen? Do we feel grateful for the house we have? Feel grateful that we're zochet to live in Eretz Israel? Feel grateful that our nose works? Feel grateful that. And this is a feeling inside, and it's the basis for Avodas Hashem. So, why do people? Could be the clips are not that good. But more likely, they say, what do I have to hear all of this for? I'm a believing Jew, ani ma'amin be'emunah shleima, and Hashem made the sun, and the wind, and you see from the Chavis Halvavos that if you don't constantly learn about it and talk about it, so then it just fades into the background, and it just becomes another piece of noise in your life, a background noise. But to really feel grateful, do we even feel grateful if we learn Shmona Esrei and we say Modim Anachnu Lach? Do we feel grateful? If you don't feel grateful, Chas V'Shalom, then the words are. We're saying false words. Modim Anachnu Lach, but we don't feel grateful. Or B'chol HaChayim Yadu Chaselo. You ask a person, why? Why? Say, well, Hashem gave them life. Okay, what else? So the Lovers is training us to see everything through the prism of feeling grateful. Not to rely on the fact, okay, I'm a believing Jew, so what do I have to keep coming to class and hearing these things for? Because if you don't, even if you do, it's a battle to feel grateful. And this is the most important thing in the world. It's after Shar HaYichud. Okay, so enough of that. Now we'll continue. Chavis Halvavos. You know, people say over something from the Yaivitz, but really it's the Chavis Halvavos who came quite a few centuries before the Yaivitz. And the flow of the Chavis Halvavos in Shar HaBechina, he talks about miracles, and he talks about when we see miracles, we certainly see Hashem, and we have to thank Hashem for creating opportunities. Klal Yisrael had in its history opportunities to see Shinoi Teva, to see Hashem, and that certainly helped them internalize their Amunah Hashem. And that's why we always have to remember Yitzchias Mitzrayim. That's why we say, Hatohare Saladas, Yashem Uhu Anukim, Einor Milvado. I was Matan Torah. I saw miracles at Matan Torah. And then Chag Havodah says, what about this man said? None of them were no miracles. I want to see something that matches the miracles of the people that saw miracles. And the Chag Havodah says, and it's quoted by the Ayvitz, the Rav HaShulchan says it also. I don't know, people didn't learn Chavis HaLavas. He says, you want to see miracles? Look at the Jewish people's history, how they didn't disappear into oblivion, let's say after the Churban Bayis Rishon, according to all the laws of history, any other nation that happened to, they were conquered by a different nation, scattered into exile, Mesamikdash destroyed, monarchy disbanded, sent away. That would be the end of their history, as happened to every other civilization. Anything total of that happened to them. And the Jewish people survived. That's number one. Number two is they survived, says the Chavis HaLavas, and he lived over 1,000 years ago. And he says they survived, and they always survived amongst Goyim, who knew that they mocked their faith. Right. They didn't mock it openly, but Jew was always very stubborn, didn't go to baptism, chas v'shalom, didn't become a Muslim, chas v'shalom, and they're walking around amongst the Goyim, who always held the upper hand over them. Regardless, we survived the Goyim knowing that when the Shach is to their holidays, we're not going to drink their wine, we're not going to eat their food, we're going to keep away from them. And, says the Chavis HaLavas, the economic circumstances of the Jew, again, study a little history, he's talking in the beginning of the 19th century. The beginning of the 10th century. The beginning of the 5th millennium. No, the 4th millennium. Beginning of the 4th millennium. And he says, the Jew always had better economic circumstances if you matched them up. Meaning, your middle class Jew lived better than the middle class Goy. The poor Jew lived better than the poor Goy. The rich Jew, that he doesn't say. But he says that circumstances were always better. That's a miracle that their economic circumstances were always better, equal or better, he says. And he says, the Goyim never drafted them into their army. They didn't want the Jews in their army. So the Goyim had this chus of going off to be killed in wars that their kings ordered, and the Jews were safe. Historically, what happened is at the time of Franz Joseph of the Austrian Empire, we had the dubious privilege of getting drafted. Why? Because certain Jews who wanted equality with the Goyim went to the emperor and said, listen, we want you to Shivayon Benetel, they said, we want to share the burden of the Goyim, why should you fight wars for us? We want to be part of the army also. So he said, okay. And he drafted them, and then already Jews got drafted. That was the first instance. That was in the 1800s. First instance of Jews getting drafted. But Chavis HaLavas says the Jews were as good economically, and they were not wanted, so they didn't go off to die in foreign wars. And he says this is a promise from Hashem that came true. And you have to realize it and say, wow, this is real Shara Abchina stuff. V'avka Zos, despite all of this, that I'm sending them into exile, he also bears Oiveyem, in the land of their enemies, people that don't like them, people that don't want to let them live, you would think. Loim Ashdim, Loim Aldim, Lachalosam, Lahofer Brisi Itam. The Jews built an infrastructure always, always, of shuls, of yeshivas, sforim, libraries, gemach, you know, lending societies. Jews always built up, and sometimes like in Spain, they became very, very wealthy, that rose very high in the government. Ezra says, Ki avodim anachnu v'abdusenu lo azuvunu alokeinu. V'nemar, we say in Tehillim, David HaMelech says, V'ulei Hashem shehoyu lanu yom ha'na Yisrael, if not for Hashem, kum aleinu adam, when men rise up against us. And then the Ushur HaMizmor, he says, V'ulei Hashem shehoyu lanu kum aleinu adam, azai chayim v'la'unu, they would swallow us alive. V'charos ha'pambonu, that's what it says. Hashem, it's a miracle. And Chavis HaLava says that's the miracle everybody could see. I'll add, Chavis HaLava says no. He survived another 10 centuries. You say, what about the Holocaust? Holocaust, very major exception to the rule. First of all, I would just say that out of the ashes of the Holocaust was born the State of Israel. And look at this now. Among this country, Eretz Yisrael, who would have ever dreamed in their wildest dreams, except that the Rebbeim said we would. The Rebbeim said we would. And the business about waiting for Mashiach was never Jewish theology. It became a theology among certain groups after Shamsi Tzvi. Shamsi Tzvi was such a downer, was so depressing to the Jewish people, that it was like almost a mental block against accepting that there would be any Geula process before open declaration of a Mashiach. But truth is, it was never like that. That's why so many people follow Shamsi Tzvi, because it looked like it was happening. There was no reason to think it wasn't happening. There were signs along the way, because it turns out Shamsi Tzvi was a charlatan and a faker, and he did a virus, and that should have, but there was no mass communication, so who knew? Nobody knew. There was no videos on YouTube of Shamsi Tzvi eating chalev and eating on fast day. So out of the ashes of the Holocaust, out of the ashes of the Holocaust rose State of Israel. That's first class state. So we're not a backward state, and we're just about at the midpoint where half the Jews in the world live here, which is an unbelievable miracle.
Yeah, it's in like the 13 principles that you're supposed to believe Mashiach's going to come. You're saying that wasn't until
after. Whoa, Chas V'Shalom.
Oh, I didn't.
That the Geula process, there will be no Geula process till Mashiach comes. Of course it's one of the 13 principles.
Oh, okay.
Till Mashiach comes, it will always be imperfect.
Okay.
Look around now. Okay. It's as imperfect as you can get. Right? We take one step forward, two steps backwards. Or maybe two steps forward and one step backwards. We don't really know. Right? We measure things in terms of our lifetimes. We have to look at like the last century. We have to look at the whole picture. It was never an article of faith that there would be no part of the Geula process happening before Mashiach.
Uh-huh.
That's why the Grah, and the Baal Shem Tov also sent his Talmid and Teretz Yisrael to really kickstart the Geula process. You know, that's what history teaches us. But it was such a pipe dream. So it was a desolate midbar. Nothing going on here. Now we have cell phones. But really, with the Holocaust, I don't want to get into a theological discussion now, but the Holocaust is the big exception to what the Chavis HaLavas is saying. But Klal Yisrael also is the big exception. Throughout almost all of history, the majority, the overwhelming majority of Bnei Yisrael believed in Hashem and kept Torah mitzvahs. And the years leading up to the Holocaust. I'm not saying why anything happened, but the truth is, but you have to recognize the reality that that also is unprecedented, that 80% of Jewish people stopped believing in Hashem and became not from. The effects of the wars from the Haskalah and the breaking down of the ghetto walls and Reform Judaism, what they call it. All these things had its effect and took a terrible, terrible toll on the Jewish people. So that also is unprecedented. Hakabonim, that's already, but the point that the Chavis HaLavas, the truth is, that even more remarkable after the Holocaust. Who would have thought that the Jewish people would survive a Holocaust? You know, it really is even more true that we rose from the ashes of the Holocaust. And we're rebuilding. Everything's being rebuilt. Hasidic courts, literacy, yeshivas, every Hasidus is like rebuilding, growing by leaps and bounds. We still have the problem of the majority, overwhelming majority, maybe, of the Jewish people not being thrown, but the graph is going up. The graph is going up, and we certainly enjoy a Gashmiistic level also that's unprecedented. As much as the Holocaust is a low point, we're way better than the Jews in Spain. Like, we're doing much, much better. Plus we have Eretz Yisrael, but nothing can compare to that. And we're here, and I say half the world's Jews are here. There's mezuzahs on every door. Amazing. So, Chavis's words are probably even more true. Anyway, we'll continue now where we're up to. But he also l'harchit, so he also l'harchit, which are Kabbalah, Zabud, Zalokim, Zichron, Rav, Tuv, Alokim, Alayna, B'Torah. So he'll talk more about the Shara Machina angle of Torah, to feel gratitude to Hashem for giving us his Torah. What can compare to that? He has given us a way of connecting to him, bonding with him. What can then that? With that, he says, I'll save Shara Zabud, Zalokim. Okay, next point of Shaar HaMechina. Again, this is the type of thing that we don't think about. And the Chavis HaLavas wants to prod us into thinking so that we should feel gratitude. The idea of a government. The world would be chaotic. The Chavis HaLavas says everything, any invention of man is from Hashem. Any institution is from Hashem. The institution of government, where people who can't agree on anything, right? But they end up agreeing in one form or another. A dictator taking over by force is relatively very rare in the history of the world. Not that there was always democracies, but they chose a king. But if they agree, we're going to have a system of government. Society gets together, people get together. This is a phenomenon of Hashem, worthy of Shara Bechina. People get together, and you have chaos. I do what I want to do. You want to do, and everybody's, yeah. It will be chaotic and it will be hetzker. There's a government, and the government makes laws, and has police, and they can't violate the laws. Sometimes the government's good, sometimes the government's bad, but it's musudar, so it's a chavis HaLavas. It's musudar for the betterment of society, and by and large, they feel an achrayus. Kings have always felt an achrayus to better society, to judge. The king was supposed to make sure that people were not treated unfairly within the system of the country. And that's a nice, because two people can't agree on, you know, what kind of milk to buy. And all of a sudden you have hundreds of thousands of people who, for better or for worse, agreed to be governed with a system and laws, and it's not chaos anymore. No anarchy. So that's amazing. That's worthy to be Masheroi Losses the Libcha. One of the things that you should think about, the Libcha, though, and to reflect upon his askamas b'nei adam, how people agree, his chavrus libosam, and they reach a consensus. And rov is chalkus b'dosam, even though for everything in the world, people are always arguing. No two people can agree on anything. All of a sudden, all these people come together, and lamados aleim ishmael, and they appoint the leader. History has developed in a way that we don't have leaders anymore. We have been brainwashed into thinking that democracy is the best system of government. Now, Hashem made that happen also. That the Chazavavas is not talking about now. But someone with a Chazavavas glasses will explain that as history developed, Hashem decided to make democracy the norm. But if I ask you, is it more chaotic? Yes. Is there more anarchy? Yes. Is there less fear of doing a crime and getting punished? Yes. Do people riot in the streets if they don't like something? Yes. When there's a strong government, when there's a king, that doesn't happen. So there's more chaos and more anarchy. So Hashem has seen fit in his wisdom, maybe because, I don't know, we can speculate on the reasons why. In this, you see clearly that the sweep of history introduced democracy, right? And then it swept over the whole world. In lip service, it certainly swept over the whole world.
In certain areas, one by one.
Yeah, so he says, but he says the best is that people appoint a leader, a strong central leader. That's certainly al pi Torah. You're supposed to have a melech, you don't have a democracy. Torah sets is the constitution. The Melech doesn't set the rules. The Torah sets the rules. And you have a figure that makes sure people are listening to the rules, and maybe that's the Sanhedrin's job more. And the Melech judges people, makes sure they're treated fairly, goes to war if they're threatened, sets up a policeman that people shouldn't break laws. But there's a central authority, a strong central government, says the Chaim Soloveitchik. He's talking about a king, Rishon and Makolov, and Hashub and Sabu, Mazar Osam, the Yireim also, and they're afraid of him, Shomer Osam. He protects them internally with a police force, externally with an army. The Chomel Aleihem, and kings in general have felt an achrayus to take care of their subjects. The Don B'Tzedek B'Neim, he judges them fairly. And he tries to work out, you know, a functioning society that's basically fair to anyone, to everybody. So this is Shara B'china, right? Because people really, I think people can't agree on anything. And all of a sudden they understand that for society to function, they're going to have a leadership with laws, and they're going to have to subject themselves to those laws, and not just do whatever they want, right, and not have anarchy. Kadeshla Yiskalkalu in Yoneim, the king makes sure that their interests are not ruined, and they don't get attacked by Oyevim. Dilu Hayakalechab and the other Mchoshishli Atzmo, if everybody would say, what do I need a king for? I'll take care of myself. The Litchos may all of. Nothing would ever get done. No bridge would be built, says the Chavis HaLovas. No building would be built. Nothing would get done because the people are not going to agree. They're not going to agree to do things together. They're not going to agree on a set of rules. You need a system. You have to work within a system. Although, he says, although you must scheme an Albinian Migdol, they wouldn't be able to build a tower. Although home or a wall, all you and your name of Korim, everything would be chaos. You need the nation to come together to build bridges, roads. So this is something a central authority can do. That's why Lao is so wanted a king. The Torah says you have to ask for a king. Why was Shmuel upset? Because till then it was more manifest that Hashem was their king. And the Shoftim took care of day-to-day life. And they wanted a king, so... And there's a machlokus in the Gemara if they were correct or not in asking for a king. Chavos HaLovos wants us to look at everything you see and thank Hashem that there's a government, that there's a hospitals, that there's firefighters, policemen, This is all Chasdei Hashem, and Hashem provided society with the brains, with the will, and with the kniya, with the, you know, they have to be the battle themselves to get together and form these things. They understand the importance of it. So that's the subject of Shara Mechina. That would be wonderful if the Jewish people, when the Melech is concerned about the laws of the Torah, and then everything, you know, is correct. If Chayshim Mishpat is the law of the land, and Ebenezer is the law of the land, and then Yerudei and Arachayim, so that's great. Mishor is the Torah, and the king is a servant to the Torah. That's how his kingdom becomes solidified. The Tasvid Malachto, like Shlomo HaMelech, Moshe Omar, Chesed, the Ames, Yitzro Melech, the Saad, the Chesed, Kisot. Vomaram Zenos, Echonot Lebrochem, Mispal, the Shlomo Shal Malchus, pray for the welfare of even a Goyish government. Shlomo Le Moro, if not for government, the people wouldn't be afraid of going to jail, of breaking laws. Ishus ve'euchayim below, people would be like fish, they swallow each other alive. They would do the most outrageous crimes against a fellow man. You have to make sure that there's a government that preserves law and order. Primarily, this is libertarian talk, nothing wrong, that's the Torah view. A government is libertarian, leave the people alone. Okay, you have to tax people because you have to pay an army. Okay, that's for protection. You have to have a police force, you have to have an army. But you have to thank Hashem for all these things. Otherwise, there would be chaos in the streets. As we see, there is chaos, right? America's falling into chaos. Okay. Now, the Chavis goes on. We're getting to the end of Shara Mechina, actually. Chavis Halavos says, now I'll tell you something else you never thought about. And you have to thank Hashem. You think people made it up. It's a gift from Hashem, and you have to feel gratitude for Hashem. Money. He says, money is the most ridiculous thing in the world. You can have all the gold in the world and all the silver in the world, and you'll starve to death. It's the most valueless thing in the world. It has no value whatsoever. It doesn't, can't do anything for you. And people have gotten together. He's not even talking about paper money. We know that paper money is a bigger joke. Because paper money is literally a piece of paper. And if, let's say, America was off the gold standard, which ain't ever happening, Nixon did, the conservative, Nixon took America off the gold standard, so it became literally a worthless piece of paper. And for some reason, you go into a store, and the guy cheerfully accepts it. It's a piece of paper, it's nothing. And he accepts it. Why does he accept it? Because the next guy accepts it. So you can buy apartments with it, and a loaf of bread, and a container of milk, and get paid. But he's talking about, in Chazalov's time, the most such thing as paper money. He's talking about gold and silver, but he said gold and silver is valueless, it's absurd, it's ridiculous, you can't do anything with it. Why do people? It's a nays from Hashem, it's Shara Mechina, that the collective psyche of the people, of the population of the world, considers it valuable, considers it something they want to have. And now you can have commerce, now you can have business, now you can buy things and sell things, and society can function. Otherwise, you would have your field, and you would have wheat. You would have a lot of loaves of bread, and you would spend the rest of your life looking for someone who has cows, so that you can buy it. You can trade some bread for some milk. And there's no eBay. So you don't know who has milk. Help! I want a little milk. Who has some meat? I want some meat. I need some vegetables. I don't have any tomatoes. Now you go to a store with a valueless, he says, a piece of gold. They say a piece of paper is a bigger joke. And they accept it. They smile. They thank you for it. And they give you a real wholesome, nutritious tomato. A And all you've given them is a worthless scrap of paper. Or metal. Another says it's a mace. It's something to thank Hashem for. It's a mace. And this allows the world to function. Another aspect to apply Bechina to, Ulohovin, Simoni Achachmo El Yona. To see Hashem, to see divine wisdom. Hayod HaTova Bimeno and Hashem's benevolence. We can never forget the purpose of Shara Bechina, is to see Hashem's wisdom, complexity, benevolence. Who has Kamas Bnei Yodam, that people agree. To buy and to sell, gold and silver, that was money in his time, or paper. They want more gold and more silver, but it's nothing. You can't do anything. The Gemara says that accepting coins as a medium of exchange, the idea of currency, more about Metzia, the idea of currency. Actually, the Gemara I'm quoting is in Mar Pesachim. There's a paragraph of Metzia that talks about currency and what's considered money, and what's considered. See, currency has a legal definition, legal tender. Sorry, Mar talks about legal tender. Not every you have a piece of gold, it's not legal tender, right? You can't go into a store and buy something for a piece of silver or a piece of gold on a practical level. The guy doesn't trust you. He doesn't know how pure the silver is. Maybe it's tin. He doesn't know how much it weighs. So then there's another chiddush called coins. That the melech, that society, weighs the silver or the gold, and then the melech stamps it. It's called a matveya. It's stamped. And it says how much it is, and that's how much it weighs. And until relatively recently in history, that was money. It's valueless. But the Chet Chavot wants you to realize the chiddush of legal tender. Forget about, he says, one chiddush is that it's not a thing that people will accept as having value, even though it has no practical value whatsoever. It's a nace. Then there's a system of currency, meaning legal tender, that everybody agrees to accept this coin or this piece of paper with a number on it as worth a certain amount. It's another chiddush. So you work and you earn money and you spend and you buy things and you're able to sell things. So that's a chiddush. The chemos amoria leyam, this is Hashem's compassion for the world. This is Hashem's Rachmanos Shigiyah Bahem Tikkun Inyonam, so that mankind could function. It's a nice Chesed Hashem, so that I can have culture nowadays, since the industrial revolution, if I can go into a store and buy things, my world is industrial. My world is not a world that produces something real, something beneficial. Moya said, "Chavetz benafsha." Even though gold and silver are valueless to your life, you can't do anything with them. Kolbishin to rabot, some of you hungry or thirsty, mechesun amozun v'amayim lo yoyilu rubam. How much gold have? Not going to do any good. Moyamalei machzor. If you have a pain in your shoulder. You're not going to get cured, he says. What good is it? What value is it? The Harvey Mishtamashim Mishtar, I'm also committed to a force. Oh, all the minerals in the ground I use for a force. Place iodine. Iodine. There's things in the ground that, not gold, not silver, no medicinal value whatsoever. Maybe you could use it for your false tooth. One of the amazing signs of Hashem's wisdom and chesed, Shem Harbe, Eitzel Tzatz B'nei Adam, that people have it and we don't run out of it. Some people have a lot of gold and silver, some people have a little. They mine it, they bring it up from the earth, and there's enough. Viloyum Harbe Eitzel Kulam, Adachim Zalavas, talks against the communist system. But he lived in the year 1000. He's already explaining why society doesn't work if everybody had the same amount of money. If people had the same amount of money, people would just get lazy. If everybody had what they needed, so they wouldn't work, and the world wouldn't function. It's because people don't have what they need. So if I want money, I have to work. So what do? I do something, hopefully, productive to society. And I make my contribution to society, and that's all your money. That system is a chiddush. That system is a chesed Hashem. Hashem has an amazing system why the world gets built up. Who builds bridges, who builds buildings, and ultimately gets done by people who want money. Chayavavus is a big capitalist. He understood. Chayavavus is definitely saying clear that capitalism is the engine of the world. This is what makes the world. This is why things get built. This is why things happen. Because people want money. They need money and they want money. And if everybody just had in their backyard gold and silver as much as they wanted, so they wouldn't do anything. Why should they work? They'd be lazy. And they wouldn't work. Everybody would retire. And nothing would get done. So it's Chazdei v'Chochmas Hashem that people need money and have to, and they work. And they have the nace that they accept a valueless bar of silver or gold, the nace of coinage, of legal tender, the nace of paper money. Name Ma'at Mitzad, Baharbe Mitzad. Gold and silver have no value, but they have perceived value. That's the Chesed Hashem. V'chein Yikara Mitzad. They're scarce enough that they have this fake value that people want them because it's scarce. U'nemimza Mitzad, but they themselves are worthless. V'chein Toelos Ba'atzmon. There's no purpose in them. This is part of the divine plan, Hashem's wisdom. This is how the world functions. It's amazing. So why do you have something essentially valueless that has a pseudo value because of its scarcity, so people want it? Because this way you can have legal tender. This way this is something everybody accepts. So if I need a tomato, I don't have to find someone. I mean, if I need a tomato, so I don't have to find someone with a tomato that needs bread, that's barter. He says, without these nisim, everything would be barter. And I would have to find someone who wants what I have and I want what he has, and we would barter. I have a little extra bread and he has a little extra milk. He has an extra animal. He'll come build something for me if I give him a piece of meat. So it's not workable. It's not workable. And therefore Hashem made this thing.
And paper isn't scarce.
You want to know why? Yeah, the chiddush of paper, I don't know, I'm not smart enough to be able to know why. Maybe it's just a way. The Gemara does say in Yemos HaMashiach there will be hyperinflation. And from what I could see, if government can just print money, then it's just a matter of time till the whole thing collapses and there's hyperinflation and nothing really. So we're getting to the Yemos HaMashiach, where the Gemara says there will be hyperinflation and people will start hoarding things because money. You know, all of societies are anywhere in South America, Central America. You need like 10,000 pesos to buy a loaf of bread. You need 10,000 pesos. So America, Chasdei Hashem, is still holding out, but it's just a matter of time. If you do a little research on the deficits that are going on now, and they just print up more money. Moshe Feiglin has a piece, he wrote, he says, there's no difference between a government that prints money and a counterfeiter. What's the difference? There's no difference. The government's printing money, and it's nothing. They just, it's fake. Now the truth is gold is also fake. Because gold is of no value. But at least it's scarce and it's based on something. America used to, if I was listening, if my teachers were talking, it used to be that every dollar had a connecto value of gold at Fort Max. That's what Fort Max was.
Right.
Now, there's still a chiddush in Shara Bechinen that people consider gold valuable.
Right.
But, okay, having said that, they accept money as a substitute. I think some dollar bills are probably out of circulation already, but they say on a gold certificate, some dollar bills used to say gold something, gold certificate or something. Now it says, thank President Nixon. So, why? I'm not smart enough. Remember, was at all. If he was here, we would ask him why the world went in that direction. The only thing I can think of is because it's just a prelude to the whole economic system collapsing. Isn't that cheerful? But that's what the Gemara says. That the Gemara says, "Mimolz Hamashiach." The Gemara says, "Mimolz Hamashiach." There will be hyperinflation. When Jimmy Carter was president, I'm old enough to remember Jimmy Carter. What was there, like 20% inflation? Yeah.
I have a question about my mind. There's no money. Being in human nature is not good.
You mean that he says people are lazy? If they don't need money, they're not going to work. No.
That's what I'm asking
you. No. That's for sure. I mean, there's a lot of things that make people work. If people lived forever, they wouldn't work. They would just say, like in Mexico, mañana, I'll do it tomorrow. Nothing would get done. If people wouldn't be facing the end of their lives, they would also do nothing. That's the human condition. There's a lot of I wrote a fiction novel about a society where people live forever.
But so when the Mashiach comes, there won't be money and people live forever. So
what there won't be a Yetzer Hara.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And there won't be a need, whatever it is.
No, you'll have to eat. Most sheep are sold, most of Mashiach will eat normal lives. Okay. We're up to the last part of Parakeh. We'll stop here. The last part of Parakeh, and then Parakeh above. And then we'll have to take a vote. We'll have to learn after Shahab. But it's not worth any.